argument is 13-1574 Native Produce v. U.S. Mr. Pardo, whenever you're ready.
Thank you. Good morning. We believe that there are three key points from this Court's 2005 Zhejiang opinion that are relevant to this current appeal. First, in the 2005 opinion, this Court recognized that both the trial court and the government had stated that the legal effect of the suspension agreement was not to eliminate dumping. Second, this Court, in its 2005 opinion, undertook its own careful and detailed analysis of the relevant statutory provisions, and it reached the exact opposite conclusion. Namely, it determined that based on the plain language of the statute, the legal effect of the suspension agreement was that it is required to eliminate dumping.
Why was the dumping determination not appealed in that case?
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
Why was the dumping determination not appealed in that case?
From the trial court's original decision? Well, Your Honor, this is one of the arguments, of course, that the government and petitioners have been raising repeatedly. There were two separate arguments that we had below, or two separate claims, I should say, at the trial court level that involved the legal issue of what is the legal effect of the suspension agreement. One of them was whether the department had appropriately determined the surrogate values and then, therefore, of course, the ultimate dumping margin.
No, but I'm talking about the appeal to our court.
Well, yes,
in my understanding of the record is that you appealed to our court only the finding of critical circumstances and that not is, the underlying dumping determination.
That's correct, Your Honor. That was the claim from below that we appealed, but incorporated in that claim, as this court clearly recognized in its 2005 opinion, was the underlying legal argument about what is the legal effect of the suspension agreement. And that was
well, let me go back to my question, if I recall it, which is why was the dumping determination not appealed in that case?
Well, Your Honor, again, I would respectfully have a different opinion with respect to what the issues were that were below.
Did you appeal the dumping determination?
We raised a separate issue at the trial court level, which
the
was...
The answer is no. Of course he didn't. Somebody made a mistake. Is there anything more to it than that?
Well, Your Honor, certainly in hindsight, it would be more efficient at this point in this ongoing appeal had we raised an additional issue that addressed this particular legal finding. Nonetheless...
I read your brief filed in the original appeal, and there's no hint that you were concerned about anything other than the critical circumstances. No hint.
Your Honor, I again, as Judge Dyke said, we fully acknowledge that the one claim that we brought to appeal in this case, in this court initially, was on critical circumstances. It was brought, however, and we supported our arguments with three separate arguments, one of which was that it was error for the agency and the trial court not to properly consider the legal impact of the suspension agreement. And that was the issue.
And the court held for purposes of ruling on your critical circumstances appeal, it was a mistake not to take into consideration the existence of the
with all respect, Your Honor, I believe that the finding of this court went farther than that. The analysis in the 2005 opinion that this court gave, 50% of that analysis was dedicated to the issue of the suspension agreement and its own interpretation of what is the legal impact of that suspension agreement. And in reaching its conclusion on that, this court specifically stated, quote, the Court of International Trade erred in holding that the suspension agreement was not designed to eliminate dumping. The court did not say that the Court of International Trade erred in sustaining the critical circumstances finding. The holding was clearly one that addressed the underlying legal issue, and the finding of this court was explicit.
Well,
the trial court had committed an error in law.
Well, we can parse the different portions of the case. You know, at the beginning and the end and the middle, this court recognized that the issue before it was the finding of critical circumstances. And in fact, their holding is when all factors are considered, there is not substantial evidence to support the finding of critical circumstances.
Correct, Your Honor. And the court also remanded this case to the trial court, and it said in its remand that it is remanded for appropriate further proceedings. I believe that's
the specific language. And the remand was understood by the Court of National Trade to be limited to the circumstances.
And Your Honor, we believe that therein lies precisely the error which we are trying to get corrected here.
Is there no consequence to the fact that you didn't appeal when the opportunity was right? I mean, that's the way these cases work, right? You lost on dumping and you lost on critical circumstances. You appealed one and not the other. Are there no consequences to that decision?
Again, Your Honor, the government and the petitioner seek to frame this case in terms of what we did or did not do, and we disagree. We believe that what is at issue here is what the trial court did.
Well, that was why I asked you my question. Is it your view that there is no consequence to the fact that you appealed one and you did not appeal the other?
With respect to the fact that this court made a legal ruling that was explicitly opposite what the trial court had found and noted as much with explicit language stating that the trial court erred in its legal finding, I believe that it is of no consequence that we did not raise that separate issue on appeal, because the trial court very clearly, under the mandate rule, has an obligation. It is not discretionary. It has an obligation to accept and apply the law as interpreted by this appellate court. And
you're both relying on the mandate rule. I mean, the government says, well, you lose under the mandate rule because you didn't raise the dumping question. You say we win under the mandate rule because the court decided the legal question. I don't know that we've ever had a case like this.
No, Your Honor.
But it is the case that the mandate rule is not an absolute rule, that there can be exceptions to it, as we've recognized. Right?
That's correct, Your Honor. And I think that at that point, the exceptions which have been discussed are really under the doctrine of the law of the case. Now, that clearly is a discretionary policy. However, both the government and the petitioner acknowledge that one of the well-established exceptions to the law of the case doctrine is when a controlling authority has made a subsequent legal determination contrary.
Those cases are all cases in which there was a controlling authority in some other case that made a determination. I don't know that any of those cases involve a controlling decision in the particular case.
I would submit, Your Honor, and by the way, I would acknowledge that as well, is that I do not believe any of those cases involve a continuation of the same appeal. Nonetheless, what I would say is if that rule has been established where there is a change in legal authority, not even within the same appeal, but from a separate appeal, how could that rule not be equally, if not more applicable, if you were talking about a controlling legal authority within the same continuing law case? It just simply would not make sense that the trial court could insulate a legal error by relying upon the discretionary rule of law of the case.
What's your view of the end game here? I was a little puzzled. Is it your view that because of the existence of the suspension agreement, the anti-dumping order is of no force and effect?
Well, Your Honor, we've tried to be very careful not to state that this is what we believe this court should do, is make a determination with respect to what the agency should do. Because
look to me like what you want to do is to upset the anti-dumping order, not just for the 6-month overlap period, but like forever.
What
is the anti-dumping order still in effect?
What we would like, Your Honor,
is the anti-dumping order still in effect?
We believe personally that with the proper application of the law as interpreted by this court, the agency now has an obligation to go back and reconsider the facts and evidence that it has before it with the proper application of the law.
Is the anti-dumping order still in effect?
If our our belief is if they accept the law as interpreted by this court,
and my question is the anti-dumping order.
It would not be. They would.
Is it still in effect today?
Is it?
That's my question. Is it in effect today? I'm sorry.
Yes, yes, Your Honor. As we speak today, yes.
And it's in effect as to your client and as to everybody else, right?
As to everybody else. That's correct, Your Honor. That's correct. However,
so what facts would they need to consider on the remand? I mean, it strikes me that you've argued that the agreement establishes the fact that there's no dumping, and the anti-dumping order we're dealing with here covers this part of the period of the agreement. So what's left on the remand?
Well, one of the major concerns, Your Honor, is that when this anti-dumping petition was initially filed, it was alleging that there was dumping occurring at a time in which it is undisputed that 100%.
I understand, but you're not answering my question. My question is, you say there should be a remand to have them reconsider the dumping. What's left to reconsider?
Because
if we were to agree with your position, what's left to reconsider?
Because before the agency can initiate an anti-dumping investigation in the first place, it is required pursuant to the statute to consider the evidence that has been provided in the petition
itself. I don't
understand
what you're saying. I really don't. I mean, what your position is that because of the agreement, there couldn't be any dumping. So why doesn't that mean that the dumping order can't be applied to you?
Because when the initial petition was filed, the agency, Commerce, was required to make a decision.
You don't seem to understand my question. In response to Judge Clevenger, he asked you what kind of relief you want. You say you want a remand to have them reconsider the dumping question. And, you know, what's to reconsider? If we agree with you, there isn't any dumping, right?
If this court agrees with us, ultimately, yes, we believe that that is the case. But
why is that necessarily so? I mean, you're assuming that a suspension agreement supplants or makes impossible a lawful dumping order. What happens about a suspension agreement that was designed to eliminate dumping, but it failed?
Well, Your Honor,
and that's apparently what happened here.
Well,
according to your view and the court's view, that this dumping order may have been, you know, the suspension agreement was designed to end dumping. But we know it didn't, because we know that for the 6-month overlap period at least, when the facts were assessed under the normal assessment to decide whether there's dumping, dumping was found. And you do not contest those findings. You agree now with those findings in the anti-dumping investigation that dumping was proved to have happened in the traditional way. That means of necessity that the purpose of the original suspension agreement, which was to prohibit the same, it failed.
Your Honor, in the 2005 opinion, this court specifically noted the argument that you state now, and it noted that the government did not argue that the suspension agreement had failed. It said, to the contrary, the government takes the position.
I'm talking about as a matter of fact. I mean, if you were to go back and if you really wanted to reopen the dumping order, go back and say, well, what's the relationship? What's the relationship between the suspension agreement and the anti-dumping order? And the answer is the suspension agreement failed. It failed to stop dumping because we've proved, and you can't relitigate the guts of the anti-dumping investigations res judicata because it's been done. And so we know, as a matter of just a matter of logic, that the purpose of the suspension agreement, it failed to achieve its purpose.
Well, Your Honor, again, the finding of dumping is particularly in a non-market economy case such as we have with China. It is not a black or white finding. It is a finding that the agency reaches through a number of...
All of that whole process of looking at India and finding surrogates and all that was hotly contested, whether that was done right or wrong. You appealed that. It went back a couple of times. Finally, it was settled at the CIT. This is legit. Here are the dumping margins. and you've never appealed it.
Your Honor, we did not appeal that issue. That is correct. However, it is very clear that the trial court's decision with respect to that claim was predicated on its belief that the suspension agreement as a matter of law was not designed to eliminate dumping. This court...
So what if it was?
Because
I mean, purposes, and international agreements fail all the time. And that suspension agreement is just in the nature of a State Department international agreement type thing. How do we know how Commerce came up with the terms and conditions of the suspension agreement? What, 82% of somebody else's prices?
I would say
the hope was that it would stop dumping, but it didn't.
Well, again, Your Honor, in the 2005 opinion, this court recognized that the government could have made that argument, and the government has not. What we do have is very clearly a situation in which the trial court's decision with respect to that issue of whether or not the dumping decision itself was valid was predicated on a legal finding that rejected our argument.
Where in the opinion did this court say that? You say we dealt with this issue, which Judge Clevenger has raised with you. That is, that the design and the effect of the agreement are not necessarily the same. Where in the opinion did we address that?
You're speaking of the 2005 opinion,
yes.
Your Honor? This, Your Honor, would be, I believe, midway.
What page?
Midway between page 13, 67, and 68.
Well,
of the
doesn't third, correspond to the
page. Oh, sorry, from the joint appendix, Your Honor.
Yeah, well, the attachment to the blue brief.
Well, Your Honor, this specific opinion that was attached to the brief.
I'm sorry, all right.
The ultimate opinion of the court.
Where is it, 1367, you say?
Yes, sir.
Where?
The paragraph begins, the government does not argue that the suspension agreement failed to comply with the statute. Rather,
the suspension agreement, right.
Correct. The government does not argue that the suspension agreement failed to comply with the statute. This, Your Honor, is, as I take it, the question you are asking, is why can't we simply say...
That paragraph concludes, the Court of International Trade erred in holding that the suspension agreement was not designed to eliminate dumping.
That's correct.
In terms of what it was designed to do, not what it actually accomplished.
Well, yes, Your Honor, but I was responding to a question that Judge Clevenger had asked earlier about why couldn't we just simply say... This was the intended effect of the suspension agreement, but it failed. And my point was simply...
The fact that the government didn't argue it failed to comply with the statute, the suspension agreement was created according to the statute. Nobody objects to that. And you know as well as I do that the suspension agreement was under paragraph L, right? And so the point here is that even if the suspension agreement had been, you know, actually designed to eliminate dumping, there's nothing that says it has to do the job. And the purpose of something is to do something you wish and you hope it to be true, right? And so the fact that the government agreed that the suspension agreement was legitimate doesn't mean that it's going to succeed. It just means that it's legitimate in its purpose. That's all.
I understood, Your Honor.
And it doesn't take a law school graduate to realize that the purpose of the suspension agreement, if it was to end dumping in that six-month period, it failed. Because we know that dumping occurred in that six-month period.
We know that Commerce determined that there was dumping.
And you did not appeal that determination.
We did not appeal that determination, Your Honor. However, the Court of International Trade ruled against us on that issue, making a legal ruling that was explicitly contrary to the subsequent ruling on this exact point of law which this court made.
No, but I think the point is it's not directly contrary to the ruling that this court made. The ruling this court made is that the agreement is designed to eliminate dumping, not that it did eliminate dumping during the six-month period that we're talking about here. So even if we were to accept your proposition that the statements in the earlier opinion are binding on the trial court, it doesn't resolve the question. It's not the same question, right?
Well, Your Honor, the statement which this court issued in 2005 was the Court of International Trade erred in holding that the suspension agreement was not designed.
It's designed, but it doesn't achieve it. So to come back to my question, what do you want to happen here? You want the trial court to consider the fact that the agreement was designed to eliminate dumping. I'm not sure what effect would that have on the dumping determination.
Well, Your Honor, the court, this court, recognized in 2005 that the trial court's holding was predicated on this finding, and this court specifically noted legal error. So,
yeah, but we're saying the same thing, but we're not connecting here. What the finding was that they erred in holding that it was not designed to eliminate dumping. And I think Judge Clevenger and Judge Dyke and I have all said to you, well, yeah, okay, let's accept that as given. And that led to their saying that you couldn't have known or should have known. And that goes to the extraordinary circumstance, the critical circumstances finding. But that has nothing necessarily to do with any conclusion with regard to the dumping itself during the suspension period.
Well, Your Honor, I with respect, we would say it does, because the trial court's decision with respect to that issue was clearly predicated on the exact same legal position, which this court then found to be in error.
Where do you dig that out of the trial courts? You're talking about the November 21, 2003 opinion?
Correct, Your Honor.
Where?
My apologies, Your Honor. Just one moment. Your Honor, as we quote extensively in our direct brief, the trial court specifically addressed all arguments with respect to our claims regarding the dumping calculation.
If you look at page 1838 of, well, I'm looking at it in Law Week in Westlaw, they say they don't agree with your argument that sales can't be at less than fair market value if a suspension agreement was in place. Nothing in the statutes tell you to do that. The Court of National Trade said we don't see any inconsistency between having a suspension agreement out there and at the same time having a proper anti-dumping order.
That's correct, Your Honor, and we view this as a finding by the trial court which was predicated on this view that it was not the legal effect or purpose of the suspension agreement to eliminate dumping. And that is a finding in law which this court directly reversed and which the trial court subsequently refused to accept in its further proceedings. We believe that that is the legal error here which we are seeking to be corrected.
Why don't we hear from the government? We'll restore
Thank you, Your
Honor. Rebuttal.
May it please the court.
Just a note, the government again has given us a brief with two-sided copying. We've had a number of cases recently where it pointed out to you that that's not permissible under the federal rules of appellate procedure, and you keep doing it.
Yes, Your Honor. We'll be sure not to do that in the future. I apologize. Beijing seeks to circumvent the mandate rule and the fact that it failed to appeal the less than fair value determination in its first appeal. It argues that this court issued a legal ruling on the purpose of the suspension agreement that was finding on the trial court. But Zhejiang fails to demonstrate how that this court's statements regarding the design of the suspension agreement has an impact on Commerce's less than fair value determination. The statute and regulations are clear. It requires Commerce to calculate dumping margins by comparing the export price, or the price that the merchandise is sold in the United States, against normal value. And for non-market economy countries such as China, the statute directs Commerce to calculate normal value using the factors of production methodology, which is precisely what Commerce did here.
Well, are you saying that, let's assume that the first decision of this court established that these agreements are designed to prevent dumping. Are you saying that that would be irrelevant to an actual dumping determination, or would that still be a relevant factor in that determination?
That is an entirely irrelevant factor in Commerce's dumping calculation. Whether a suspension agreement is designed to eliminate dumping has no consideration by Commerce in its dumping calculations. The statute and regulations don't permit Commerce to consider the existence of a suspension agreement. It sets forth a particular methodology that Commerce must use in calculating dumping margins, which is what Commerce did here, and which is why the Court of International Trade sustained Commerce's less than fair value determination. Zhejiang argues that the trial court's decision was predicated on the fact that it believed that the suspension agreement was not designed to eliminate dumping, but that's simply not the substantial portion of the trial court's case. The trial court merely was addressing Zhejiang's own argument that the suspension agreement was designed to eliminate dumping. But in fact, the critical analysis by the trial court regarding Commerce's less than fair value determination.
What's the status of a suspension agreement? Is it like a treaty? What's the status in the law of a suspension agreement? Do you know?
I don't think I understand your question.
Well, what I'm trying to ask is, what's the enforceability of a settlement agreement?
The enforceability?
It's an agreement between whom? Between the Chinese government?
Yes.
The Chinese government and the United States government?
Yes.
And the duly authorized Secretary of Commerce is allowed to sign it?
Yes. And then the parties, interested parties, all take part in providing comments.
I understand. And they found out there are limits to how many. The Chinese were limited to a certain amount of imports and a certain amount of prices. And the facts here show the Chinese were in full compliance during, I'm not talking about the six-month overlap period.
Right.
Because the consequences here are odd, because you have a six-month overlap period when the parties were in compliance with the suspension agreement, and yet they would be deemed to be in violation to be dumping, right? Mm-hmm. So my question is, can the United States government collect anti-dumping duty from a party who is in compliance with the settlement agreement?
Yes.
Why?
Because the purpose of a suspension agreement is entirely different than what actually happens pursuant to the suspension agreement. Just because we didn't argue that there were violations of a settlement agreement.
If the Chinese had violated either the pricing or the quantity limit on the imports, what would have been the consequences?
Consequence is, well, it depends on whether an interested party raises
Let's assume we go back, forget about the dumping agreement for a moment, and just take the suspension agreement. Say the Chinese, they violated both the volume limit and the pricing limit. What are the consequences?
I believe the statute requires the suspension be lifted, and then they would continue the investigation. And I think that's pursuant to 19 U.S.C. section 1673C.
So those are the penalties.
But if there's an agreement, and I know you disputed that about this agreement, but if there is an agreement that's designed to prevent dumping during the period of the agreement, as a matter of practice, does Commerce ever assert dumping in those situations?
Well, the facts are a little different, because suspension agreements that are designed to eliminate dumping, they contain language within the agreement saying, referring to the normal value, which is what Commerce calculates, uses in its calculations for its dumping margins. But the suspension agreement at issue here didn't contain those words. The reference price wasn't based on normal value.
So is the answer that in a normal situation where there is a suspension agreement, that that precludes a dumping finding?
No, it doesn't. It very well could be that nobody alleged a violation of this subsection B agreement.
Well, suppose somebody did allege a violation of a subsection B agreement. What would Commerce do?
Well, it would terminate the agreement and would continue the investigation.
Suppose there was an allegation that there was dumping but compliance with the agreement.
Well, that the violation, Commerce ultimately determined that
Let's say that we have a standard suspension agreement under B, and you say that has normal value calculations in it.
Right.
And there's compliance with that agreement. Would Commerce ever go after the importer under those circumstances who complied with the agreement and alleged that despite the compliance with the agreement, there was still dumping?
Well, it would have to investigate and actually determine, you know, whether
Commerce ever done that?
I don't know.
Seems kind of unlikely.
Probably, but I can't say for sure. It seems unlikely.
Isn't it really the government's position or government's position earlier that the elephant in the room was that our court made a mistake in the earlier decision? Isn't the agreement in this, the suspension agreement in this case, is a subsection L agreement for non-marketing economies?
That's what we believe.
Isn't that? I read the suspension agreement. It says we're issued pursuant to L.
Yes. That's our position,
And L doesn't, the purpose of L is not to completely eliminate sales at less than fair value.
That's our understanding of the agreement at issue. Okay. This court has no further questions. We respect the request that this court affirm the CIT.
Good morning, Your Honors. Michael Corsi for Appellant, the Domestic Producers of Honey, Sioux Honey Association, American Honey Producers Association. Perhaps I can shed some light on your question, Judge. The suspension agreement had a pricing component that allowed the Chinese to price at 92% of third country imports over the five-year period. Start of the five-year period, prices led throughout by Argentina were very high. Argentina prices crashed and brought the prices way down low. By the time the suspension agreement was for the end of its five-year term, the domestic industry saw it was not doing what it was supposed to do. It was not preventing, even if you assume it's to prevent dumping. That was not happening. They waited for it to expire by its terms and then filed a new petition for a new investigation.
Okay, that's helpful. But what's the answer to the other question? If this were a B agreement, does Commerce ever assert dumping where there's compliance with a B agreement?
Your Honor, those agreements are very rare. They do not, and so I do not know of an occasion where that has happened. Here, in our case, you have the perfect example of where, even assuming the agreement was intended to prevent dumping, it didn't. Manifestly, it didn't. And this is in Judge Eaton's many decisions. You can find he explains it quite clearly how this happened. So even if you have this agreement being to prevent dumping or to eliminate dumping, it clearly didn't. This case, I guess, I wanted to present. Do I have another question, Your Honor?
Go ahead.
You know, I first wanted to point out that Mr. Pardo, I don't think really answered your question about what does he want you to do. You need to turn to page 25 of their opening brief. Here's what they want. They're claiming that Judge Eaton below erred in his remand instructions to Commerce. He says the brief says the CIT should have instructed Commerce to conduct further proceedings on remand.
in accordance with this court's holding that the purpose of the suspension agreement was to avoid dumping. And, this is the important part, that according to this provision on suspension agreements, any subject merchandise sold at prices in compliance with the suspension agreement could not, as a matter of law, have been dumped. This is basically taking a dicta statement from this opinion.
I don't think it was dicta.
If it's not dicta, Your Honor, I guess the point I would make here is they are taking, they had the opportunity to appeal the dumping determination. If you look at Judge Eaton's original decision, it's 31 pages. 10 pages of those are dedicated to the dumping decision.
Your adversary has admitted that he did not directly appeal the question that he's bringing to us right now.
I guess
he's arguing that it was implicit somehow. He thinks implicit in his appeal, and he says, even if it wasn't in my appeal, it was a gift from heaven.
But
the court's opinion, it's like Zeus shot an arrow down, and it was designed to go right into Eaton's heart. Judge Eaton, here's our thunderbolt.
This is where it breaks down, Your Honor, and I think you've already hit on it in keying on this language from Judge Eaton. Those 10 pages of analysis, Judge Eaton did make decisions. He did say that the suspension, that the dumping law has all kinds of provisions. He went through them, over 12 separate provisions, 10 cases he cited in going through this. That's how you calculate dumping margins, and nowhere could he find any place to say you have to take into account a suspension agreement. Now, that is what he held. What they're not filing their appeal did is it deprived the government and us and you of the opportunity to air these arguments openly in court. This is an end run around this whole process, around these 10 pages of his decision.
Everybody's getting a ton of due process today. I see you're running over time.
Your Honor, I basically...
You may argue the government cut into your due process time, but it's a fair hearing.
Your Honor, I think this is, the case law is clear. Parties have to live with the consequences of their making a decision not to appeal. They have 14 plaintiffs here. 5 of them are exporters, importers. They went after the smallest, most insignificant issue, okay, that would not, when lost, destroy the order. They decided to go against it. And that decision, who knows why they made it. But they made it. Now they want to come back and destroy the order.
I think we have your argument. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Cardo will restore a couple minutes of rebuttal.
Thank you. For the record, Judge Clevenger, I do not wish that Zeus or anyone else shoot an arrow through Judge Eaton's heart. I have full respect.
It was a figure of speech.
I'm relieved.
In case you're
I'm relieved for that clarification. At the conclusion of this court's initial opinion, when this case was then remanded back to the trial court at that point had, within its own authority, the discretion to revisit any issue or legal finding that it wished at that point.
Why should it revisit? If the only holding was that the agreement was designed to eliminate dumping, why would that cause someone to re-examine the dumping determination?
Again, Your Honor, because we believe that a large part of the decision which Judge Eaton had made previously was predicated on his view on a legal issue that was directly contrary to what this court had stated.
I understand that he discussed that, but what I'm asking you is why, if the agreement was designed to eliminate dumping, why does that help you in setting aside the dumping determination?
Because when it is clear that not only the trial court but the agency below held an erroneous view as to what the legal effect of the suspension agreement was. Therefore, it is the duty of the court to correct the legal error and remand the case back to the agency to afford the agency an opportunity to reconsider the facts with the proper application of the law. And this is what has not happened in this case. There is a clear indication that both the trial court and the agency made findings and determinations with an erroneous view of the law as interpreted by this court. We merely seek for this court to issue an instruction to the trial court to fulfill its obligation to apply the laws interpreted by this court. Thank you.
We thank all counsel for the cases.